It had been lying away from the man's corpse, as if the impact had knocked it off. But now that Clavaine had locked an identical helmet onto his own suit, that was harder to believe. The latches were sturdy, and he doubted that the drop into the crevasse would have been sufficient enough to break the mechanism. He considered the possibility that Satterholm had put his suit on hastily, but even that seemed unlikely now. The airlock had detected that Clavaine's glove was badly attached. It, or any of the other locks, would have surely refused to allow Satterholm outside if his helmet had not been correctly latched. Clavaine wondered if Satterholm's death had been something other than an accident. He thought about it, trying the idea on for size, then slowly shook his head. There were a myriad of possibilities he had yet to rule out. Satterholm could have left the base with his suit intact, and then, confused and disorientated, he could have fiddled with the latch, depriving himself of oxygen until he stumbled into the crevasse. Or perhaps the airlocks were not as foolproof as they seemed, the safety mechanism capable of being disabled by people in a hurry to get outside. No, a man had died, but there was no need to assume it had been anything other than an accident. Clavaine turned and began to walk back to the base. "He's awake," Galliana said, a day or so after the final wave of machines had swum into Iverson's mind. "I think it might be better if he spoke to you first, Neville, don't you? Rather than one of us?" She bit her tongue. "I mean, rather than someone who's been conjoined for as long as the rest of us." Clavaine shrugged. "Then again, an attractive face might be preferable to a grizzled old relic like myself. But I take your point. Is it safe to go in now?"
"Perfectly. If Iverson was carrying anything infectious, the machines would have flagged it."
"I hope you're right."
"Well, look at the evidence. He was acting rationally up to the end. He did everything to ensure we'd have an excellent chance of reviving him. His suicide was just a coldly calculated attempt to escape his then situation."
"Coldly calculated," Clavaine echoed. "Yes, I suppose it would have been. Cold, I mean." Galliana said nothing, but gestured toward the door into Iverson's room. Clavaine stepped through the opening, and it was as he crossed the threshold that a thought occurred to him. He could once again see, in his mind's eye, Martin Satterholm's body lying at the bottom of the crevasse, his fingers pointing to the letters IVF. In vitro fertilization. But suppose Satterholm had been trying to write Iverson, but had died before finishing the word. If Satterholm had been murdered, pushed into the crevasse, he might have been trying to pass on a message about his murderer. Clavaine imagined his pain. Legs smashed, knowing with absolute certainty he was going to die alone and cold, but willing himself to write Iverson's name. But why would the climatologist have wanted to kill Satterholm? Satterholm's fascination with the worms was perplexing, but harmless. The information Clavaine had collected pointed to Satterholm being a single-minded loner, the kind of man who would inspire pity or indifference in his colleagues rather than hatred. And everyone was dying anyway. Against such a background, a murder seemed almost irrelevant. Maybe he was attributing too much to the 6 faint marks a dying man had scratched on the ice. Forcing suspicion from his mind, for now, Clavaine stepped into Iverson's room. The room was Spartan, but serene, with a small blue holographic window set high on one white wall. Clavaine was responsible for that. Left to the conjoiners, who had taken over an area of the main American base and filled it with their own pressurized spaces, Iverson's room would have been a grim gray cube. That was fine for the conjoiners. They moved through informational fields draped like an extra layer over reality. But though Iverson's head was now drenched with their machines, they were only there to assist his normal patterns of thought, reinforcing weak synaptic signals and compensating for a far-from-equilibrium mix of neurotransmitters. So Clavaine had insisted on cheering the place up a bit. Iverson's bedsheets and pillow were now the same pure white as the walls, so that his head bobbed in a sea of whiteness. His hair had been trimmed, but Clavaine had made sure that no one had done more than neaten Iverson's beard. "Andrew," he said, "I'm told you're awake now."
I'm Neville Clavaine. How are you feeling?
Iverson wet his lips before answering.
Better, I suspect, than I have any reason to feel.
Ah. Clavaine beamed, feeling that a large burden had just been lifted from his shoulders.
Then you've some recollection of what happened to you?
I died, didn't I?
I pumped myself full of antifreeze and hoped for the best.
Did it work, or is this just some weird-ass dream as I'm sliding toward brain death?
No, it sure as hell worked. That was one weird heck-ass of a risk.
Clavaine halted, not entirely certain that he could emulate Iverson's century-old speech patterns.
That was quite some risk you took. But you'll be glad to hear it did work.
Iverson lifted a hand from beneath the bedsheets, examining his palm and the pattern of veins and tendons on the rear.
This is the same body I went under with? You haven't stuck me in a robot or cloned me or hooked up my disembodied brain to a virtual reality generator?
None of those things, no. Just mopped up some cell damage, fixed a few things here and there, and, kick-started you back to the land of the living.
Iverson nodded, but Clavaine could tell he was far from convinced, which was unsurprising. Clavaine, after all, had already told a small lie.
So how long was I under?
About a century, Andrew.
We're an expedition from back home. We came by starship.
Iverson nodded again, as if this were mere incidental detail.
We're aboard it now, right?
No. No, we're still on the planet. The ship's parked in orbit.
And everyone else?
No point sugaring the pill.
Dead, as far as we can make out.
But you must have known that would happen.
Yeah. But I didn't know for sure, even at the end.
So what happened?
How did you escape the infection, or whatever it was?
Sheer luck.
Iverson asked for a drink. Clavaine fetched him one, and at the same time had the room extrude a chair next to the bed.
I didn't see much sign of luck, Clavaine said.
No. It was terrible.
But I was the lucky one. That's all I meant.
I don't know how much you know. We had to evacuate the outlying bases toward the end, when we couldn't keep more than one fusion reactor running.
Iverson took a sip from the glass of water Clavaine had brought him.
If we'd still had the machines to look after us...
Yes, that's something we never really understood.
Clavaine leant closer to the bed.
Those von Neumann machines were built to self-repair themselves, weren't they?
We still don't see how they broke down.
Iverson eyed him.
They didn't. Break down, I mean.
No. Then what happened?
We smashed them up. Like rebellious teenagers overthrowing parental control. The machines were nannying us, and we were sick of it. In hindsight, it wasn't such a good idea.
Didn't the machines put up a fight?
Not exactly. I don't think the people that designed them ever thought they'd get trashed by the kids they'd lovingly cared for.
So, Clavaine thought, whatever had happened here, whatever he went on to learn, it was clear that the Americans had been at least partially the authors of their own misfortunes.
He still felt sympathy for them, but now it was cooler, tempered with something close to disgust.
He wondered if that feeling of disappointed appraisal would have come so easily without Galeana's machines in his head.
It would be just a tiny step to go from feeling that way toward Iverson's people to feeling that way about the rest of humanity. And then I'd know that I'd truly attained trans-enlightenment.
Clavaine snapped out of his morbid line of thinking. It was not trans-enlightenment that engendered those feelings. Just ancient, bone-deep cynicism.
Well, there's no point dwelling on what was done years ago. But how did you survive?
After the evacuation, we realized that we'd left something behind, a spare component for the fusion reactor. So I went back for it, taking one of the planes. I landed just as a bad weather front was coming in, which kept me grounded there for 2 days. That was when the others began to get sick. It happened pretty quickly, and all I knew about it was what I could figure out from the comm links back to the main